Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Yeah. All right.
To the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadelsky. I got my co-host here, Dr. Carl Nadelsky Jr., super endocrinologist. And we are going to be talking today about hormones and weight loss. Here's the general scenario.
Or weight gain.
Whether it's
because that's what they
yeah, weight gain, sure.
Think.
Whether it's my patients or followers online, and you could just read comments. It doesn't even have to be my fault. You can just read comments on any kind of weight loss page, fitness page, or anywhere where they're talking about weight loss. People will say, weight loss does not come down to calories in, calories out. It comes down to hormones. And so you have to balance your hormones to fix your weight, and it has nothing to do with eating fewer calories and that type of thing. There are a lot of people pushing this around. We've already had a podcast all about the carbohydrate insulin model of obesity. So if you haven't listened to that one, give that one a listen, because it goes specifically into insulin, which we'll also talk about today. But we got my brother. He's a super endocrinologist, not just a regular endocrinologist, but a super endocrinologist.
I do wear a cape
super
half the time. He
has been told he has an action figure like physique. So, or maybe a video game, a polygon, like he looks like he's cut out with polygons. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Here we go. It doesn't matter. Anyway, we can discuss today. I hear somebody say it's the hormones, I always want to know, what specific hormones do you mean?
And right.
What specifically are you going to change in order to fix those hormones to help you lose weight? Because inevitably, whenever people say they're going to balance hormones with diet and exercise, right, what they do to lose weight is eventually reducing their calories in such a way that also helps their hormones. So anyway, maybe you can go over like, what the heck's a hormone anyway?
Yeah.
What do they even mean by hormones?
Yeah, I know. So, and that's what's, and so no offense to any specific patients, but when patients ask us to check their hormones, that means really kind of nothing to us, because there are innumerable hormones. Hormones are really just chemical messengers in our bodies that go from one type of cell, generally through the bloodstream, to communicate distantly with other types of cells in the body to get something happening for some sort of activation. And these, you know, hormones can be lipid or cholesterol derived, like steroid hormones, amino acid derived hormones, different types of peptide hormones. There are all sorts of different kinds. And so, you know, endocrinologists, we take care of people who have issues with hormones or the glands that are supposed to secrete the hormones. And so when we talk about the regulation of energy balance, go back to our podcast on obesity as a disease, I think, is where we talked a little bit about the hypothalamic control. So your hypothalamus, kind of in the middle of your brain area, has a lot of some of the receptors and hormones itself that really control and influence other hormones that are a little bit more famous for energy balance and regulation. So, but you know, a lot of people think about sex steroids as hormones, you know, testosterone in guys, estrogen in females, even though we all have a little bit of all of the above. And then there's a bunch of intermediary hormones. You know, we have hormones from our hypothalamus telling our pituitary to secrete hormones, to tell our testicles or our ovaries to make the sex steroid hormones, or adrenal hormones, our thyroid hormone, growth hormone, all these other things. We have hormones that come from our fat cells that play a dramatic, significant role, like leptin, we talked about in our first thing. So, you know, and insulin. So yeah, insulin's a very famous hormone that comes from the pancreas that, you know, works on glucose, sugar utilization within our cells of our body, fat cells, muscle cells, liver, etc. So all these different hormones, lots of different hormones, clinical endocrinologists, doctors, evaluate somebody, and if there is an indication to look into a hormone issue, that's what drives us to look into specific ones. It's you know, that stuff's based upon history, symptoms, patient background, genetics, and things that we see. Right? You're a family practice doc. You do that.
Here are the top things that I hear when I hear hormones. It's my hormones. Okay, so number one, if they are postmenopausal, their estrogen levels are lower, and so they kind of blame it on that. That's one of them. And they kind of say it's wonky, but they just say it's my estrogen levels. Usually, when I hold their fire, the feet to the fire. Another person will say, well, it's probably my thyroid. Mm-hmm. Another person will say, I have insulin resistance, so it's my hormones. And then other people will say, I think it's either, like you said, testosterone if it's a guy, but cortisol is the other one mm-hmm. that I hear.
Yeah.
So maybe we can just kind of go through each of those types of scenarios. So hypothyroidism, we've had a few, we've talked about this a few times. We talked about diet for hypothyroidism. But in general, for thyroid, if you have hypothyroidism that's not treated, your metabolic rate technically is
lower.
Going to be lower.
Yeah. And it's going to contribute to a more positive energy balance and storage of excess weight. Also, fluid retention, by the way. But so
yes,
hypothyroidism is not helping anybody with their adiposity. But generally speaking, it is not one of the causes of what we would call marked obesity, not dramatic weight gain. People will notice, don't get me wrong. If you suddenly develop hypothyroidism, you'll probably gain some weight, you know, have some cold, feel cold, have skin hair symptoms, reduced bowel movement frequency, etc. But it's not one of the major drivers of obesity. However, one of the references I will cite during this podcast, the European Association of Endocrinology, or the European Society of Endocrinology, published really good evidence-based guidelines a couple of years ago for what hormones do we need to check when we're concerned that there's a hormone issue in obesity. And generally, thyroid is one of them. I mean, thyroid gets screened all the time, even though there are some mm-hmm. people we know on social media who thinks it doesn't get checked enough. But it gets screened for all the time. And if someone's getting evaluated and checked for obesity, we should definitely make sure that the thyroid is not having a problem either, you know, because we could have pituitary issues, but usually it's going to be an actual thyroid issue. And also, by the way, we need to make sure we don't get tricked into thinking someone has hypothyroidism just because obesity also causes a lot of hormone abnormalities when we look at blood work. For example, you know, high levels of leptin that come from our fat tissue, our fat cells, they sort of drive a little bit of, it's almost a compensatory thing, part of the energy, actually a higher metabolism, and they'll have a little bit higher thyroid stimulating hormone, which might make it look like it's going up because the thyroid itself is not working. But generally that's just a product of the excess adipose tissue itself. So we also, you know, we don't want to give so thyroid hormone just for no reason.
They actually have higher
metabolic
T3
rate
levels, T3 levels, which is the active form of thyroid. I think leptin, they think they were looking at thyroid releasing hormone, which then goes to the mm-hmm. TSH. I think that's the mechanism they thought was related. So,
mm-hmm.
so usually those with obesity actually have higher levels of thyroid hormone. Now, again, we check it all the time, just to be sure.
Yeah.
And what happens though, if somebody has hypothyroidism, a lot of the weight that's gained is fluid mm-hmm. actually, and not a lot of it's fat. So you normalize their thyroid levels, and then most of the weight comes off. In general, there are a lot of people, if they've went, you know, untreated for a long time, may still have some excess fat, but it's really not common.
And it's not going to be the thing that fixes everything, by the way. And,
no,
you know, and by the way, we have tons of people who show up, you know, get referred to us who have very florid primary hypothyroidism. They have no thyroid hormone and they barely notice, and it hasn't driven obesity in their situation. So they had other, you know, metabolic flexibilities that helped them maintain you know, relative body composition. But generally speaking, if someone has real overt primary or central hypothyroidism and they have obesity, we definitely want to treat that. Absolutely. No questions asked. Yeah. Everyone should.
I got diagnosed with hypothyroidism in medical school. Yeah, I didn't really gain any weight, but I was, I always laugh because I'm like, oh, I still had abs and whatever. But it's, people get so mad at me because like, well, screw you. That didn't happen to me. I'm like, I know, just interesting
there,
anecdote.
Yeah, there are a lot of other aspects to it. And by the way, a lot of real hormones that really do play a role in obesity pathophysiology is just not the ones that people think it is.
Yeah, so we'll get into those in a second. The other thing is thyroid does probably have an effect on appetite. So even if your metabolic rate is a little bit lower, it's possible your body would compensate with an appetite of eating a little bit less too. So there's multiple ways your body compensates. Either way, you can get screened, and if you do have hypothyroidism, treating it, you know, whether it's with just T4 or if you have to do a combination of T4, T3, your metabolic rate should go back to what it was, and you shouldn't have, that shouldn't be the issue for you losing weight.
Yeah. And, one more little point on that too, because people are going to want to know, you know, about combination therapy, T4, T3, and, you know, because every, you know, people out there are going to be like, oh, no, doctors only use the T4, blah, blah, blah. Well, one, that's not true. And two, who really can benefit from a little bit of combination of T3? Well, at least in the studies where they look at these, there's not a huge difference between the combinations and the pig thyroid and the T4. But the few areas where there does seem to be a trend of benefit, maybe in the people who don't convert that well, and there does tend to be a little bit of a better weight outcome. There's a little bit of a vague preference and a little bit better weight. Again, not dramatic, because hypothyroidism doesn't cause dramatic obesity, but a little bit. And sometimes a little bit does matter for, you know, so there's something to it.
Yeah, especially what people, yeah, how people feel. All right. So the next one, postmenopausal, I guess, women. So, of course, you know, the elephant in the room is there were two guys talking about postmenopausal. You know, people are like, you guys don't understand what it's like. But I've had hundreds of followers and patients explain to me the symptoms, and then and I've treated many, and so I think we're, you know, qualified, and obviously my brother's an endocrinologist, we're qualified to discuss it. And from looking at the data, it's clear there is a shift once you go through menopause, when your estrogen levels start declining. There is a shift in preference for storage of visceral fat, the fat that surrounds your organs. You can't pinch it like subcutaneous. There's a preference of storage of visceral fat once you go through this change.
Yeah.
And so that happens. But I think you can actually give hormone replacement therapy, and that shift reverses. But it's very subtle.
It can maybe be prevented a little bit more than anything. To be like the studies show, like those who use female menopausal hormone therapy, you know, soon after menopause, when they're younger than waiting later, they tend to gain less weight. You know, as opposed to like an intervention once you've already gained weight, they tend to gain less weight and have less, you know, visceral abdominal obesity and stuff like that. So that's, you know, important to know too.
Yeah, either way, it's very small. It's not going to turn into this marked, you're not going to become, develop obesity, marked obesity from going through menopause though. So,
yeah,
but it can make things difficult. It can certainly make losing weight tougher.
Yeah.
And I think studies show this, that it's probably more so the symptoms that occur from it, as opposed to the hormonal milieu, meaning like it's not the actual decrease in estrogen that's making it tough necessarily. It's how it makes the person feel, to where lack of sleep, we know lack of sleep
that's a big one,
really disrupts your fat loss goals from multiple angles, from appetite reasons to obviously you're feeling tired, so you don't want to do anything else. You don't want to cook, you don't want to exercise, that type of thing.
Cravings,
feeling irritable, and that type of thing. So energy balance is of course an issue there. And then yes, there is a small effect from the partitioning of of the adipose, but from someone just developing obesity and then not being able to lose weight because of postmenopausal, being postmenopausal, that's not actually true. It's still energy balance. It just makes it a little bit tougher from probably the symptoms you can get from it.
But that can be fairly dramatic. Because sleep, sleep is such a big deal. I'll tell you, often, we get so many people referred to endocrinology for fatigue, just to try to see if there's some hormone. I mean, that's not really what people are supposed to do, but it happens all the time, right? And so we're always trying to figure out fatigue. Well, I'll tell you, half the time, the fatigue is due to some sort of sleep issue. And their struggles with diet, exercise, weight loss is often due to the sleep issue. But these things are all bidirectional. So a lot of times it turns out my postmenopausal females, they're struggling with sleep. They're having hot flashes. And we get them on a good routine and they feel better. They do tend to do better with their diet, exercise. Now, I'm not giving you trial data, but it's all consistent with it. And then suddenly they're able to kind of focus on all these things. I mean, it can be pretty dramatic with relatively minimal intervention.
It's an indirect thing, not specifically from the hormone, but it's indirectly from the hormones. In an indirect way.
Yeah, the menopausal transition is associated with a little bit of increased overall fat, but like you said, that distribution is maybe more of the hormonal milieu, the truncal region, the insulin, the things we care about, the insulin resistance, because that's the thing. It's associated with that cardiometabolic disease of extra adiposity that's really actually more concerning anyways. And that is a little bit more of the hormonal part of it. And so we have to pay attention to it. But you guys as patients, we as physicians and dieticians and exercise physiologists all working together with you. So, a part of health,
Practical takeaway from that then. So for the hypothyroidism, obviously screen, get treated if you have hypothyroidism. Yep. Most people don't have it as a cause of obesity. For postmenopausal women, you're like struggling with weight loss and you have some of these symptoms and it's truly hard to stick to a certain lifestyle. Don't do hormone replacement therapy just for the slight shift in body composition just by itself. But if you're having significant symptoms, that's just making it really tough to stick to a lifestyle. You better talk to your doctor because there are therapies available. And it's hormone replacement therapy or otherwise.
Exactly. But yeah, that's a very personal.
Okay,
personal
next hormone.
Thing, so, okay, which one?
Yeah, next hormone, cortisol.
Yeah,
cortisol is a big one. The stress hormone. You see supplements marketed as we're going to decrease your belly fat storage hormone called cortisol, and we're going to give you this supplement that takes care of it. So you're going to reduce your belly fat. You're going to drink apple cider vinegar. You're going to take phosphatidylserine, rhodiola, whatever. And you're going to chop off that belly fat. Anyway, cortisol, we've talked about this a little bit before. Cortisol comes from your adrenal glands. And we did this on the adrenal fatigue podcast.
The adrenal fatigue lecture. You can hear a little bit about the adrenals there. Yeah.
A little bit more. Anyway, cortisol, stress hormone, comes from your adrenal glands.
Yeah.
And Cushing's disease. I mean,
Cushing's syndrome. Just briefly, I guess. So, Cushing's syndrome is excess cortisol, or it's called a glucocorticoid in general. The most common cause of it is what we call iatrogenic, but that's medication. So, if people have to take prednisone, dexamethasone, high doses of hydrocortisone for whatever reason, oftentimes it's an anti-inflammatory thing. That's the most common cause of this. And but then we have Cushing's disease, where the pituitary is making too much adrenocorticotropic hormone, ACTH, that stimulates the adrenal production of cortisol. Or you could have Cushing's syndrome that's adrenally predominant, generally from an adrenal adenoma. And there's some other even more rare entities of that. But so excess cortisol is certainly not good for us. I mean, if you have a pituitary tumor or an adrenal tumor driving excess cortisol, or if you're taking too much cortisol type medication, that is pretty bad. I mean, and it does increase energy intake. It's not great for metabolism. It again, generally speaking, it more or less shifts where we're storing it. So it's like an extreme version of storing all the adipose tissue where we don't want it, in our visceral abdominal area intramuscularly. And it's also catabolic, meaning it's bad for our muscles and our bones. So it breaks down our muscles and bones. And so people who have real, really, really dramatic Cushing's syndrome, like let's say some of the rare things are from cancers, where it's like really through the roof, they're actually very thin and frail. They'll get some abdominal obesity. Kids who have Cushing's, one way or the other, they do develop more of what we would call generalized obesity, because they're growing and it even stunts their growth, and they'll just increase just their adiposity in general. But most adults, it kind of depends on the severity of the disease, but you know, certainly it's something to think about, but there are very specific signs and symptoms that we think about with Cushing's. You get a round red face, you get real big wide purple stretch marks. Hip weakness is a pretty specific one for Cushing's, because the muscle breakdown. You get the fat, if anybody's watching, it's called supraclavicular, right above your clavicles. So you get like puffy right here, and the dorsal cervical fat padding, they'll call it a buffalo hump. And so these are signs that we'll look for. And if we started looking at everyone with obesity for this, we'd probably find more of the real subtle, like adrenal nodules that make a little bit of too much cortisol. There's still debate, though, and this gets complicated, like if we incidentally find that stuff, if it's like real mild, should we do anything about it? But if we start looking at everyone with obesity and diabetes, we'll find a little bit more. But it's not dramatic enough. It's still too rare to just screen everyone with obesity for that. So it's really these signs and symptoms that we should be looking for. The other problem of this is that, you know, there are enzymes in our fat tissues that actually keep the cortisol around instead of being deactivated into inactive cortisone. And all the, you know, talking about hormones, all these hormones interact together too, by the way. So just having obesity itself increases normal cortisol levels, which does to some degree work against people, but it's not like the driving force. That's kind of the ultimate conclusion of this long-winded description.
It's always this chicken or the egg. So here's what happens. People are like, I'm stressed out, and I'm pretty sure it's my cortisol levels stopping me from losing weight. Now, they don't have pathological Cushing's.
Yeah, not what I was just talking about. Not a pituitary tumor, not an adrenal tumor, not a severe cancer, and they're not taking anything that's steroids.
So you'll see, you know, programs out there claiming that, you know, like supplements, like I said, phosphatidylserine and all these other little things that can modulate your cortisol levels to help you lose your belly fat, because that's got to be the reason. Now, there's some mild plausibility out there that being more stressed, having higher physiological, not pathological like in Cushing's, but physiological cortisol secretion, higher levels of it, maybe there is a small little effect on mm-hmm. on your abdominal adiposity or composition. Yeah. But how do you fix that? Well, you got to find ways to not be so stressed, I suppose. But I wouldn't focus on that for the reason for your obesity.
This gets into, you know,
excess.
And what's ironic, you know, about those people that sell that stuff, you know what they say? You know what their marketing ploy is? Treat the root cause. Doctors aren't treating the root cause. But they're not treating they're not treating the stress, anxiety, poor sleep, sleep apnea, by the way, that does drive cortisol up too. You know, if we treat all those things, that's the actual underlying cause most of the time. And if the underlying cause really is some sort of Cushing syndrome, either from medications, adrenal tumors, pituitary tumors, etc., those things need to be treated. It's very important. These can be very severe disorders, and those have to be treated for sure.
Yeah. So the underlying cause is that you don't have a rhodiola or phosphatidylserine deficiency, and don't expect stress reduction to solve your abdominal obesity either. It may help with then eating a little bit better as well, because the stress can also help. It's confounded. You're stressed out, so you're also going to eat. Is it the cortisol, or is it because you're stressed out, it's making you want to eat? I don't know. We could debate Probably debate that. I'm not even sure how to test
talk
that
about
exactly,
a bi-directional thing. I mean, they're all these things are together. Again, that's why we have to all be holistic and work together as a team and think about all aspects of everything. And if there are concerns about looking into this, we look into it.
Yeah. The next, we'll save testosterone because we're going to do a whole podcast with another endocrinologist all about male obesity associated or a secondary hypogonadism. But it's kind of a similar situation as kind of postmenopausal hormone replacement therapy. But we'll save that. I think the next one I'd like to talk about is insulin resistance, PCOS, kind of that milieu of if I have insulin resistance, that means I can't lose weight by just eating fewer calories. I mean the comments on my Instagram, it's insane. Even though I say it directly in my address it directly in my post. That despite having insulin resistance, if you get into a negative energy balance, you will lose weight. I don't care if you have insulin resistance. It doesn't matter if you have insulin resistance. The insulin resistance will probably increase your cravings and appetite and decrease your satiety. If you get into a calorie deficit, energy deficit, eating fewer calories than you burn, your insulin resistance will actually improve. It doesn't prevent you from losing weight. It just doesn't. Like there's studies and studies that show this all over the place.
And in fact, again, going to this root cause concept is that people who have obesity complicated by insulin resistance and things like PCOS, we need to treat the root cause that is the obesity. You know what I mean? Like instead of saying, well, the PCOS and the insulin resistance is causing the obesity, it's the other way around. Now, but so this goes to them again, back to, well, what are some true reasons that insulin can cause obesity? Well, an extremely rare condition is an insulinoma where people can develop tumors on their pancreas that secrete insulin. Well, insulin itself doesn't necessarily drive obesity, but if you have too much insulin, whether you, again, take it from a medication, which is iatrogenic insulin, or if you have it from an insulin-secreting tumor, you have to feed it so that you don't die of hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, and this gets into what we call nutrient partitioning. And so, people who have insulinomas usually are gaining weight because they just have... they're pumping out too much insulin all the time and they have to feed it. They have to eat more. They have to take in more energy to treat that. But those who have obesity associated insulin resistance, PCOS, prediabetes, type 2 diabetes, that's not the case. We want to treat the underlying force there, which is the obesity, which is a complex thing.
If you want more detailed into our whole carbohydrate, insulin, obesity podcast, you just go listen to that. But the bottom line is like, hey, you don't have to go low carb to lose weight. You can though. It might help with your glycemia.
Yeah.
But eating fewer calories. I talked about this before. I just had somebody on Twitter say, I ate 1,200 calories or 1,800 calories. I couldn't lose weight. Now I eat 3,000 calories and I'm keto and now I'm losing weight. That didn't happen. That never happened. I'm not saying you're intentionally lying. I'm saying that didn't actually happen. You think it happened, but that didn't actually happen. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. It drives me insane.
All right. What else? Okay. What other ones?
So, what else? There's growth. Growth hormone deficiency actually is a real cause.
Not of marked obesity. So growth hormone is very important for our body composition, muscle, adipose tissue, health probably. So again, hypothalamic pituitary disorders can result in growth hormone deficiency. They're, you know, genetic things. Maybe there are more people than we realize who have growth hormone deficiency because it's one of the first cell lines to get knocked out for whatever reason. So, for example, boxers or people who have a history of traumatic brain injury, they can have some slight growth hormone deficiency. And if it's true and if it's proven, and it's a little bit of a pain in the butt to diagnose this, but growth hormone replacement does improve body composition, but growth hormone deficiency generally is not what's like driving again, kind of like the thyroid deal, and probably even less so, marked obesity. So it's not something we just screen for everyone with obesity unless there's, you know, some pertinent history, signs, symptoms, stuff like that, especially if there's known, you know, pituitary surgery or radiation or other disease. So that's kind of that, but it's a very modest increase in adipose tissue and decreased muscle mass for, with growth hormone deficiency, but very meaningful potentially.
Let's get into what actually the hormones that are actually involved in obesity. And first, let me just say, okay, so energy balance, right? Energy balance, calories in, you're taking them in versus out. So the thyroid changes the out. Testosterone, estrogen, cortisol, those change where?
Mostly.
Now, what changes the in? Well, insulin resistance could change the in, but that's it's not the in insulin could potentially, if you have high amounts of insulin, like you said, in an insulinoma, you're going to be hungry. Yeah. That's going to change that in portion. But there's a bunch of hormones that people don't actually talk about when they say it's my hormones, and it's their appetite hormones, probably the most important part. And it's funny because everybody wants to go for the more sexy testosterone, estrogen, cortisol stuff, thyroid stuff. Yeah. But those are actually not the biggest drivers. It's the appetite, how much we eat.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe you can just briefly go over some of those.
Because this could get long-winded too. But you know, the famous one that has become famous is leptin. So our adipocytes, our fat cells, secrete leptin, and that's part of the communication between our body and our adipose stores and our and what our body wants to have. That this sort of set concept of the set point, right? And so leptin itself generally goes into our hypothalamus, into an area that we call the arcuate nucleus that has a couple centers that respond to different hormones and go up and work on our appetite, satiety, and metabolism. And leptin should improve our appetite or reduce our appetite. And it tries to block the other side of it, the hunger hormone side. And but with obesity, there does tend to be this some form of leptin resistance. So it's not working as well as it should because people with obesity have high levels of leptin and it's obviously not doing the job that it's meant to do. So that's one.
Some will argue that the leptin is there only to keep us from starving. So it only works one way, but it doesn't work the opposite way. So if you have very low leptin levels, it'll make you super hungry.
That is true.
But then you get to a point where it's not that's this is the whole I mean we could we'll have some of these neuroscientists on there, but either way people with obesity have high levels of leptin and yet it's not stopping them from eating.
So some people they might ask about, well, what if I don't have any leptin? So there are extremely rare, very rare disorders where people are born without leptin. They have very severe early onset obesity within a few months of being born, and so that can be treated with leptin replacement, of course, but it's exceedingly rare and should be seeing specialists and geneticists right from the beginning. All right.
Yeah, leptin receptor deficiencies and all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. We can get into some of the more nuanced big one. Stuff. How about ghrelin?
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's talk about the opposite. Ghrelin.
Yeah, ghrelin. Ghrelin's. I've seen some really cool lectures on ghrelin. It gets this also gets pretty complicated because there's an acylated form and all this different stuff, and it's people with obesity actually might have lower levels at certain times, and it might be more of a sensitivity to the ghrelin. But ghrelin in general is a hunger hormone, comes from our stomach, secreted by our stomach. So it's thought that maybe bariatric surgery helps with that because it cuts out part of the stomach.
The gastric sleeve
secretes ghrelin.
Yeah,
gastric sleeve. So it's they're looking at, you know, ghrelin. I think they're looking at vaccines that block ghrelin. They're looking at all sorts of ways to hopefully help with hunger. But ghrelin's a hunger hormone, probably somehow related to the obesity pathophysiology. But I think a lot of these things are working in harmony. I don't think you can just deal with just one. I think that protein probably decreases. There's some studies that show that protein decreases ghrelin the most of all macronutrients. But like, again, you can't really take it in isolation.
No.
Because, I don't know, you could drink a whey protein shake, lots of protein, and then you could be hungry compared to eating like a whole thing of broccoli, which doesn't have much of protein, and that fills you up a little bit more. Anyway,
by the way,
lots of different things involved there.
For people, out of interest, ghrelin, you know, what its other role is it's a growth hormone secretagogue, meaning it stimulates growth hormone secretion. That's kind of where it gets its part of its name from.
All the intermittent fasters, that's why they're like, well, look, this is why my growth hormone's so much higher, because I'm not eating, because they're ghrelin.
People with anorexia have high growth hormone.
Yeah. The big ones that we makes it more practical is this glucagon-like peptide 1. This is where we're going to get into the lectures or the podcast on weight loss medicine, but there's probably disturbances in those specifically with type 2 diabetes, with adiposity, with GLP-1, glucagon-like peptide 1. This is a hormone that's secreted from your gut slows down your gastric emptying, yada, yada, yada. But in obesity or in weight loss, there's receptors in our brain that react to these there's GLP-1 receptors that have that same kind of satiety signals that my brother's talking about in the hypothalamus that go up to our higher cortical areas that help with satiety. So now we can actually give exogenous GLP-1 agonists things that can't be as well broken down, and that can induce satiety. But so it's possible there's disturbances in those,
and there are specifically, but that's not, again, it's not like a specific deficiency per se. We just know that those with obesity and on the spectrum of type 2 diabetes dysglycemia have suboptimal function of their GLP and maybe now, as we're learning, GIP, some of these other hormones. And this is where we get into the second generation of obesity medications, because all the scientists that are doing this are working on these different gut hormones and the combinations of them, and they seem to be working really well. And we might even have a little podcast on the newest one just recently approved, the dual GLP-GIP agonist tirzepatide. I don't know if we've mentioned it yet, but when we talk about medications, we'll certainly get into that.
We'll definitely have a podcast on that. There's other ones. Other things come from the gut that are hormones. Remember, we're talking about hormones here that may have relate to weight loss.
Yeah.
And again, I think the most important ones are these satiety hormones, peptide YY, CCK. Am I missing a few other ones? It doesn't matter. These are hormones basically that people should be thinking about, as opposed to the more sexy hormones that we talked about earlier.
And the hormones, the neurotransmitters within the hypothalamus, the arcuate nucleus that we're talking about, you know, the propiomelanocortin center, the alpha melanocyte stimulating hormone that it's secreting up to the, you know, melanocortin 4 receptor. You mentioned the extremely rare diseases where we have a medicine that replaces that now for those very rare, severe obesity of childhood that have some of these deficiencies where we can replace that. But this is where all the actual hormones are a problem.
The takeaway here is that, look, hormones are involved with weight loss. When somebody says they can't lose weight because of their hormones, it's probably not, unless they have one of these pathological conditions.
Yeah. Technically, based on all the hormones we just talked about, but not the hormones they're talking about. Well, that's the thing. That's what's
right.
It is hormones, but they not
think
what
is their hormone. Yeah, they think it's their whatever XYZ hormone. It's not going to be one of those that they think it is, unless they have something like, if they do have overt hypothyroidism or Cushing's or one of these other things that we talked about. Postmenopausal, but even still, that I wouldn't call that pathological number one. Number two, it's still not going to be kind of an overt, marked, as my brother would say, obesity. It might be just a slight little bit of weight changes. So,
but those should all still be addressed if prevalent. I mean, you know, again, holistic care. We all need to be holistic, and those things do need to be addressed.
Yeah.
But also treating the underlying driving pathophysiology of the real hormones that are not tumors or anything like that, but, you know, the real underlying obesity regulating type hormones that we can help address through all the things we're talking about. Diet, exercise, sleep, medication, surgeries.
But the principles still apply. Energy balance still remains. Hormones can change where you store it. They can also change how many calories you're burning. They can change how much we're eating. So hormones are absolutely related to weight loss. Energy balance is also related to weight loss. They're intertwined. You cannot disentangle them. To say hormones have nothing to do with weight loss is incorrect. To say they have everything to do with weight loss, probably not correct. Mm-hmm. So just understand that. I've made little videos on it to try to make it concise, but that's what this, we're trying to go a little bit more into each of the hormones in this podcast to kind of give you an understanding. Yeah. If you eat fewer calories than you burn, you're going to lose weight, even if you have Cushing's, but it may make it extremely difficult due to the appetite changes. And you, because of the enzymatic changes and where you store fat because of the cortisol, you may not start losing belly fat. You may really hold on to that belly fat because
of that. You'll lose muscle.
But in physiological changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's interesting, you see these very skinny arms and then marked abdominal circumferences.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting thing.
And all these other hormones we just talked about make it, it is easier said than done to just, people can't just go eat better and exercise and lose weight because of all these hormones that are working against them. But that's where we have to do more holistic care and consider medications and surgeries, because it is hard. It is, you know, it is from some of these hormones, but you don't have a tumor that needs to be cut out most of the time. Sometimes. Then you'll end up seeing somebody like me and then a surgeon. But
And the programs out there that claim they're going to balance your hormones, you have some hormone type, that's another.
Yeah, that's a huge red flag of quackery.
Red flag.
If, quackery. If people are saying that, they're
just trying to.
Then you're going to end up going to see a real hormone doctor and probably a surgeon and stuff like that if you have real, real pathology.
Yeah. Don't waste your money.
Yeah.
It's a BS. Anyway, if you like this podcast, review it, subscribe, tell your friends, send it to somebody.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities.